Here's a story about a remarkable Kenyan woman. Daphne Sheldrick grew up on an African farm, where she turned her passion for wildlife into a career. For more than two decades, she was co-warden of Kenya's Tsavo National Park. She campaigned against elephant poachers and threw herself into raising orphaned animals. Now, Dame Daphne Sheldrick, she's written a memoir called Love, Life, and Elephants. Her story begins with a hair-raising encounter.
You know, we were looking for this elephant called Eleanor, who used to be an orphan. I've known her since she was two, and I had a friend with me who was very anxious to meet her. So we drove around the national park in Tsavo National Park, which is a very big place. It's 8,000 square miles, the size of Michigan State. I'd seen her the day before amongst a wild herd, and I just stopped the car and called her, and she'd come out of the herd, and she'd put up her big foot, and you put your arms around it, and we have a little chat, and then she goes back into the wild herd. So we were looking for her, and we came to this waterhole, and this cow approached. And it actually didn't look anything like her, but I was so convinced that no wild elephant in Tsavo National Park, where they've been poached very badly by people for ivory, would actually approach a strange human being. They have no reason to have any fondness for human beings there. But that's where I was wrong, and this is a lesson that I could never have learnt any other way, that elephants are intelligent and sophisticated enough to actually pass a message to another one. This turned out to be Eleanor's best friend, a cow that we later gave a name to, Catherine. But at that point in time, I said to the friend who was with me, I don't think it's Eleanor. It doesn't look anything like her. So I said, well, we'll soon find out. I'll call her, and if it's her, she'll come to me, and if it's not, she obviously won't. Well, this cow walked straight up to us, and we were able to actually touch her trunk and cheeks, and the eyes were very mellow, and my first words were, Eleanor, you've put on weight. She looked different. But I thought, well, that has to be her. And he said, can you go and stand next to her and I'll take a picture? So I planted myself next to her great big front leg and put my arm up to touch behind the ears, which is something I always did with Eleanor. And the cow flinched and she just flicked me, got me with not the sharp end of the tusk, but the middle of the tusk, and used the trunk as well, and threw me using the force she would on another elephant. Well, I'm not a lightweight, but
but you're not another
elephant. I fell against this jagged sort of boulders, smashed the leg, and I couldn't get up. It was an open wound. There was blood and bone everywhere. And then this cow came to me, and I thought, my God, now she's going to kill me. I thought it was my last moment. And I turned onto my stomach because for some reason, I just didn't want to be skewered from the front. And I could feel her putting her tusks underneath my body and trying to lift me. So I knew she wasn't going to kill me because that's not how they kill people. They usually kneel down, use the top of their head. And then she sort of stood up over me and put up this great big foot and felt the wound very slowly, moved it all over my body using the trunk as well. And then she tried to lift me again. And again, I shouted, no, no, no. And she looked at me for a little while and then wandered off.
This would have been for anyone else an absolutely terrifying moment, but you relate it quite calmly, as though it's just part of the years you've spent with a civilization of elephants.
Well, I knew that this cow was actually trying to help me, because if she'd wanted to kill me, she could have done it very easily. Mm. But that incident left me with a broken leg that took 15 months to heal.
But did nothing to break your attachment to elephants?
Oh, no. You know, I understood now that elephants can communicate a very sophisticated message to one another, and that Eleanor had obviously informed this cow that I was a friend.
Which was why she allowed you to come so close and why she came when you called.
Exactly. Well, she thought, well, I'm not Eleanor, but this is Eleanor's friend. I better go and sort of be polite.
You had by then spent a lot of time with elephants. In fact, you grew up on a farm in Kenya. Were there always animals in the wild in your life?
Yes. When I grew up on this farm in the highlands, wild animals were very prolific everywhere. And I had my first orphaned little bushbuck when I was about 3 or 4 years old. Holidays were spent under canvas in wild places, and I married into the wildlife service and lived in Tsavo National Park for many years which holds the largest population of wild elephants in Kenya, and was able to observe, elephant behavior. And, of course, my husband was an encyclopedia about all this.
You married David Sheldrick and lived with him. He was the warden of Tsavo?
Yes, he was.
Wasn't just elephants that the two of you were interested in. You had a variety of orphaned animals you took care of, didn't you?
Yes, we would take in any animal that we felt we could return to the wild when it was grown, rehabilitate. We never believed in keeping them captive. I've raised most of the indigenous antelopes from Dick Dicks to Elands, and about 23 Cape Buffalo, about 15 black rhinos, all sorts of little smaller things like mongooses and genet cats and all that type of stuff.
I think the casual observer looking at this can understand your attraction to elephants. A rhino, on the other hand, seems a little daunting.
Rhinos, they're very ancient animals. Rhinos have actually been unchanged for something like 60 million years. But they're complicated because they work through chemistry and scent and fiercely territorial. So although they're quite easy to hand rear on artificial milk compared to an elephant, they're very, very complicated to actually reestablish back into a resident wild community. And that involves, first of all, replacing the mother figure, not just with one person, but with several people. You mustn't get the rhino too attached to one person, otherwise it simply won't follow another. And walking around the dung piles and urinals of the wild ones, because everything works through chemistry and scent, and they all contribute to communal dung piles. And so the resident rhino will come to the dung pile, find the scent of a newcomer, think, oh, this one doesn't belong here, follow the scent trail because they kick their dung, put their scent on their feet, and through a special gland in the roof of the mouth, take some of the urine into the mouth and breathe in, and through that they'll be able to determine through the hormone levels, male, female, rank, everything they need to know about the others, they know from the communal dung piles and urinals.
How absolutely extraordinary that is.
And if they know one another, they can be very social. They'll meet up at dusting places. But if they don't know someone, everyone will be trailing the scent of that newcomer and he'll be killed straight away. So it actually takes 3 years to integrate an orphaned rhino into a resident community. And it's complicated because all the wild rhinos will be bent on killing that newcomer to begin with, but they'll be scared of the humans. So the humans are the protection.
One of the things that interests me is your statement that you had to have several different humans become involved with each of the rhinos. And I gather from the book that it is not just rhinos you found that true of, that it was a good idea for several to be involved in the raising of all of the orphans so that they don't become too attached. Is that right?
Well, certainly elephants, they need a family. So this is a mistake I made with the first one I hand-reared, Aisha. You know, there was just me, and then when I had to leave her because my daughter was getting married, I had somebody else to look after her, but it wasn't me, and she died of a broken heart. So I then knew that I'd made a serious mistake. There should have been many people, and in the nursery now where we raise the elephants, we've got 20 in there at the moment. A different keeper will be sleeping with every elephant in a stable or stockade every single night, and they rotate. So that all the elephants know all the people and all the people know all the elephants, all the keepers, and they keep in touch.
This seems like nothing so much to me as similar to sending your child off to college or to be married. It's hard to break up the family, but everybody kind of understands.
Well, it's elephants are very emotionally identical to us humans. You know, they've got many attributes that we don't have. They can communicate with infrasound, which carries a long distance, low-frequency sound. They can hear seismic sound through their feet. I'm convinced that they can communicate with telepathy as well. And they have a memory that far exceeds that of ours. So in many respects, they're much more sophisticated than us. And they're actually much nicer. They're very gentle. Although they're very big and strong, with elephants, you reap what you sow. And if you've only treated them with tender, loving care and kindness, they will do the same to you.
That's Dame Daphne Sheldrick. Her memoir is called Love, Life, and Elephants.